Hey guys, welcome to Adulting with Autism, the podcast where we dive into the roller coaster of adulthood through a neurodiverse lens. I'm April Ratchford, your friendly occupational therapist mom, proudly on the spectrum and raising an amazing young adult son with autism. Join us as we share stories, tips, and laughs, offering a supportive space for anyone navigating life's twists and turns. Grab your drink of choice, no judgment, and let's embark on this journey together. This is Adulting with Autism. Hey guys, happy hump day. Welcome back to Adulting with Autism. I hope you guys are having a better start to the week than I have. It's a continuation from Friday where I had to take my son Z to the ER. And then I've been feeling under the weather, so I was not able to get that second episode out like I wanted to. And there's no control over that. I feel terrible for it, but I can't beat myself up. Things happen. And that's a leading into my next guest. My next guest deals with emotional avoidance. And I know some of us out there have that. And some of us are like, what exactly is it? So Dr. Michelle Maitenberg is a private practice clinician and director of Through My Eyes, a nonprofit 501 organization that offers free clinical guided videotaping to chronically medically ill individuals who want to leave a video legacy for their kids and loved ones. She also teaches at New York University and graduate course in mindfulness practice. She also sits on the board of the directors of the Boys and Girls Club in Mount Vernon, and she's also a part of the American Red Cross Crisis Team, and she serves on the board of directors of Westchester Trauma New York. So she has been certified in several therapies, including cognitive therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, acceptance and commitment therapy, family therapy, and eye movement desensitization reprocessing. I'm going to mess that word up every single time, so most people know it as EMDR. She is an author of Free Your Child from Overeating, 53 Mind-Body Strategies for Lifelong Health, and her new book, Ace Your Life, Unleash Your Best Self and Live the Life You Want. She also is a blogger. I don't know how, because she does so much. For Psychology Today, and she did a TED Talk. So I'm going to link all of that in the show notes so you guys can look that up and look up her books. So I want you to give a warm welcome to my guest, Dr. Michelle Maitenberg.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for coming on to Helping with Autism podcast. So I have a question for you. What is emotional avoidance?
Okay. So I did a TED Talk some time ago on emotional avoidance, and it's kind of hard to explain in a nutshell, but I'll try my best. We as human beings, you know, tend to avoid discomfort and danger because our brain is wired to avoid discomfort and danger. So when negative emotions come up, we tend to be avoidant of them. What does that mean? We could distract, we could repress, we could deny. You know, we do all these kind of masterful kind of brain things because it's so uncomfortable. You know, when we have feelings like sadness or disappointment or regret, you know, or anger, frustration, rage, like all of those emotions that tend to be really uncomfortable. And, you know, the issue with doing that is it's actually helpful for us, first of all, to have those emotions, because it connects us to like what's important to us. It lets us know how we're feeling, right? It lets us know if a value was rubbed up against, you know, for example. And then the last thing too is, you know, as human beings, we have to kind of welcome in all emotions. You know, we're not like these unilateral kind of humans, right? That just could only feel happy, because we're told we should always feel happy. But when we're trying to feel only happy, we're both denying the unhappy, you know, feelings. And also we're always trying to get happy, which makes us unhappy, because that's impossible, right? We can't always be happy. Doesn't make sense.
Well, for those on the spectrum that emotions tend to be so overwhelming, how can they just kind of ease on out and just let it happen without just getting either revved up or shut completely down?
Yeah, which is a great question. Because a lot of people, you know, again, a lot of people on the spectrum actually have, you know, some people have anxiety, for example, depression, right? Or have like ruminating thoughts, you know, and that's true for every human for that matter. So yes, that's a great question. And, you know, sometimes emotions could be overwhelming because they're felt so deeply and so intensely. So, you know, I think your question is like, how do you regulate it so that it doesn't become so overwhelming? And then it also like kind of spills over into your behavior, right? So the way that would happen would be like when somebody yells at somebody else, right? Or somebody, you know, may like judge somebody, you know, prematurely, you know, right? There's all these different things we do when we're having these intense emotions. We might isolate ourselves, right? We may shut down in our relationships. Like there's all different things we do. So what I would say, and part of the emotional avoidance is to expose yourself to the emotions that tend to be very challenging. So how would you do that? Is you have to do it incrementally, very, very, very slowly. Okay. It's a process. So let's say you're feeling really angry and rageful. Okay. Which happens to all of us, happens to me too. Right. Instead, right. If you just notice the feelings, oh, I'm feeling really angry, right? And you're able to slow yourself down. Okay. Sometimes we need to take a little break, maybe go take a walk, right? Sometimes we may need to just close our eyes and sit quietly. You know, sometimes, you know, we could do all these things to kind of take time so that our brain could catch up to our body, right? And we could process how we're really feeling instead of revving up and acting from like these deep emotions, which usually don't serve us well, because our deep, deep, intense emotions, especially the ones that happen right away, you know, really are, there's a part of the brain that takes over and our whole nervous system, right, reacts to it. So when you slow yourself down, you're able to think more clearly and you're able to say to yourself, huh, like what's making me so angry right now? Like, why am I feeling these such intense feelings? Like I need to understand that a little bit better, right? Cause they're so, so overwhelming. And then you could say to yourself, you know what? My friend said something to me that was hurtful, right? And when, because I value friendship so much and because I'm such a thoughtful person and I am so thoughtful when I speak to other people, that was really hurtful to me. And then I could say to myself, how else can I see this? Well, you know, my friend doesn't usually say hurtful things to me. I wonder if they maybe meant something else by it. Maybe I'm taking it in a way they didn't mean it. Or maybe they're having a like a hard moment. Maybe they didn't get enough sleep and they're irritable and, you know, they're not in a good mood or whatever. Like I care about my friend. I'm curious like why they would say that to me. You know, because they're usually very, very, very thoughtful. So that would open you up to asking questions. Oh, you know what? When you said that to me, like, I don't know what you meant by it. Like, I'm so curious what you meant by it, you know, and because we're such good friends, I really want to understand you better. Now that is really helpful, right? Because that could help you connect with the person. And then you feel good and proud of yourself and you increase your confidence because you could say to yourself, wow, I was just about to yell at my friend and I was just about to accuse my friend of saying something to me without even giving it a second thought. But I was able to slow myself down and I was able to think about it and I was able to be expansive and open. And I actually communicated to my friend in a really helpful way. And now I even learned something. I learned something about her that I didn't know before. And right, going forward in our relationship, right? I could like learn something about how I want to communicate to other people.
So along with emotional avoidance, can technology like your cell phone or video games, can that just be a part of the distraction? And what do you do when they're just so distracted?
Mm-hmm. Well, we tend to distract because, yeah, we don't want to feel uncomfortable. We tend to distract. You know what else we do is we kind of put stipulations on when we want to feel and how we want to feel. So what does that mean? Like, I'm only going to say hello to that person if it's comfortable for me, or I'm only if I know that they're gonna, you know, react favorably towards me, you know, and we can't control other people. You know, we can only control our own behavior. So I think, you know, it's always very, very important to think about how you're experiencing something, to think about other people and their experience, right? And to be conscious, right, of what's kind of going on inside of you, right? Because we're always relating to other people, other things, the world, right? And we come to the table with a lot of, you know, emotions with our experiences from our, like, childhood, let's say, would come from what we're taught, you know, based on our race, religion. You know, there's so many things in the world that impact on us. And we have to understand that better so that we're acting from a mindful place, right? And we're being our best self.
What's one thing that someone can do to be mindful? And what exactly is mindfulness? Because I know some people consider it like meditation, which a lot of people are like, I can't do that. I can't sit and be quiet.
Yeah. So it doesn't actually mean to sit and be quiet, because I think people have that misunderstanding. Mindfulness is a very broad word, right? So there's mindfulness is really being in the present moment on purpose and non-judgmentally. And there's a person, his name is Jon Kabat-Zinn. He's the one who came up with that definition. And I think it's a good one, right? So what does that mean? We are always, because of our brain, it's wiring, we're always thinking about the past or we're thinking about the future. Okay. And when we live in the past, we're thinking we regret, you know, why did we do this? Why did we say this? Why did we behave this way? Right. And if we're living in the future, we're worrying, you know, what's going to happen? How's it going to happen? Right. So we're hardly ever in the present moment, the here and the now. Okay. Cause our brain is always going back and forth. And the only thing that we actually know is right now. Like, I don't know what's going to happen in an hour from now. I don't know what's going to happen in 5 hours from now. I have no clue, right? I could plan for it. Sometimes things don't come out exactly as we plan either, right? Not usually it does. So I know right now, as I'm sitting here talking to you, I know that I'm safe. I know that, you know, I'm having a conversation. I know that I'm breathing, that I have good health, etc. And when you're present, okay, that is when you're the most mindful, okay? Now, we also get into a lot of judgments, okay? So we have to also be careful of that based on our experiences and our upbringing and all of that. And also, besides our judgments, which make us sometimes judgmental, right, we also have to do it intentionally. Like, mindfulness is about a practice. What are you going to do in order to be in the present moment? So it could be taking a walk and noticing your environment, things around you, nature, right? It could be like yesterday, I had somebody in my office and she was getting very anxious and like her heart was racing and all that, right? And I said to her, look at me, you know, and I had her look in my eyes and I said, put your feet on the ground and feel your feet strongly planted on the ground. You're here with me right now. Okay. You're safe, right? You're safe. You're here. You're hearing my voice, right? That's like kind of a grounding mindfulness exercise. And there's hundreds and thousands of different mindfulness exercises. Meditation is a type of mindfulness practice. And by the way, there's thousands of different types of meditation. So let's say you're the kind of person that can't really sit with a guided meditation, right? Because it's hard for you to just sit, like you said, right? You could do a meditation on a candle. You could light a candle and just look at it and you could recite what you're seeing, right? You could talk about the wick and you could talk about the flame and you could talk about the wax and all of those things, but you're teaching your brain to focus because sometimes it's really hard to focus. Yeah. Right.
That was a good definition because so many people just throw it together.
I know.
So when someone has a negative experience, and they're getting overwhelmed with their anxiety, how can they just practice the mindfulness, because I know some people get so anxious, everything goes out the window.
Yes, that is so true. And you know why that happens is because we go offline. Literally, our brain goes offline. So there's a physiological, biological, cognitive thing that actually happens to our brain, literally, you know, and there's two parts of our brain. Okay. One is our executive functioning brain, which is our prefrontal cortex. And I know I'm getting very sciencey here. And then there's like our amygdala, which is our feeling center and which controls like our emotions and our nervous system. So when we're in a really high state of emotionality, right, whether it's happiness, sadness, whatever it is, our amygdala, which is our feeling center, takes over. Now, that's not helpful. You know why? Because then we're not thinking straight, right? Because we need our executive functioning brain to be working. So the way to do that in those moments is to do things that you're actually thinking, right? So like I said, when you're paying attention or, you know, all of those things help to bring that brain, that part of your brain, back to front and center so that you're actually doing things mindfully. So when you have these big emotions, you really want to catch it. Okay. Like, so 0 to 10, it's much harder to catch it when it's at a 10, right? You really want to catch it once you start feeling it escalate, once it kind of increases it, right? Intensifies. And how do you know that? Is sometimes we feel it in our bodies. Right. So sometimes people will say that their increased heart rate or they feel, I know myself, it's so interesting. Like I know sometimes I'll be sitting and I'll see that I'm clenching my fists and I don't even realize it. And I'll be like, whoa, what is that? And I'll say, something's going on, you know, like look how tight I'm sitting here like this. Right. Or we'll like our posture. Sometimes we'll like have a very poor posture, right? Cause we'll be all constricted and intense. So, you know, noticing your body is really helpful, you know, so you could do like a body scan. You could go from like the top of your head to the bottom of your feet and just close your eyes and think about how you're feeling in your body. You could do that. You know, you could also think about your emotions, like on a scale from 1 to 5, how sad are you feeling or how anxious are you feeling, right? One of the things that you don't want to do when you're anxious is you don't want to respond to your thoughts. So I say that a lot. So what does that mean? Because that causes spiraling. So your mind may say to you, you know, something horrible is going to happen. And then you respond to that. Oh no, that's not true. I'm okay. Like nothing's going to happen. And then your mind will be, oh yes, it will. You know, it's going to happen. What do you mean? Of course it's going to happen. And you're going to have this dialogue back and forth. But every time you respond to it, guess what? The anxiety increases. Right? Because it's trying to protect you and you're not letting it. You're saying to your brain, you don't have to protect me. I'm okay. And then your brain is like, oh yes, I do need to protect you. Right? It gets like all like kind of like, right? Sassy. So it's best to just observe it and to say, oh, my mind is really worried right now, or my mind is really sad right now, or my mind, like speak to it, not respond to it. That's a really important skill.
So should someone practice mindfulness daily to get in the habit, just to train yourself to catch it before it goes out of control?
Great question, too. Yes. Mindfulness is a practice, like anything. So if you want to have good health and wellness, you need to practice exercising and eating right, right? If you want to change the structure of your brain, because mindfulness helps to change the structure of your brain, literally. So we see through research that it, and through also MRIs, right? Which kind of takes that mindfulness actually replenishes something called gray matter in our brain, in the hypothalamus of our brain. So in order for that to actually happen, we need to practice it. And what we know about our brains is our brains has neuroplasticity. That means it's made like literally out of plastic. So we can shape it. We can change it. We can transform it, but it does take a practice. It's not going to happen just because you want it to happen. You know, unfortunately, it doesn't happen with mostly anyone. Right?
Right. So for someone who is kind of stuck in the past and they're trying to get to be even, but it's always like they go into the backwards and it affects their self-acceptance. What can they do?
Again, a lot about it is noticing. You know, it's recognizing that you do that. And when it happens, to catch it, right? So, oh boy, there goes my mind, right? It's regretting. It's focusing on what happened in the past, you know, and why does our mind do that? Again, right? It's wired to protect us. So it does that in order that we don't repeat mistakes. But what happens is then we end up feeling bad about ourselves. What's wrong with us? Why did we do that? You know, et cetera, which then makes us feel very bad about ourselves. And it actually impacts negatively on our confidence, right? So you're not going to make changes, positive changes, if you don't think highly of yourself. If you think negatively of yourself, you're not going to make positive changes because you're going to think, I can't do it or whatever, right? So the way to do that is to say, I am going to make an intentional effort to be in the present moment, right? What does that mean? My mind is kind of going to the past, and I understand why I did that, because at the moment that I did that, I was a different person at a different time. I only know what I know now because of what I went through. I only learned that lesson because of what I went through. And at that time, I wasn't ready to see myself. I wasn't ready to make a different decision. I wasn't, for whatever reason, right? But now, in the present moment, in the here and now, I have a choice on how I want to go forward, how I want to live my life, the decisions I want to make for myself. And that could be very life-changing.
Well, my other question is, if someone has always thinks negative of themselves, so in order for you to make positive changes, you have to think positive about yourself. What can you do for, what can someone do for themselves that constantly think negative? Do they have to do affirmations? Journaling?
So that's a big question. And I wrote a whole book about it.
Oh, yay.
My whole book is about that. So I'll show you the cover of it because I really like the way it came out. I'm excited. But so it's called Ace Your Life, Unleash Your Best Self and Live the Life You Want. Okay. So the whole book is about acceptance, compassion, and empowerment and what to do on how to acquire those skills. So in terms of increasing your confidence, it really has to do with the doing. Okay. We can't just say to ourselves, oh, we want to be this and we want to do this, you know, and think it. That's not good enough. We have to do it. Okay. And when we take action and we do the things that really lean into our values and what's important to us, that's when we're going to have the changes we want. Okay. But there's things that get in the way of that, which get in the way of us practicing self-acceptance, that get in the way of having self-compassion, that get in the way of us empowering ourselves, right? So that's what I talk about in my book. You know, one is, what are the barriers for all of those things? And then what do you need to do in order to have acceptance, compassion, and empowerment, right? So it's kind of a model or a guide for your life in order to, like I said, live your best life and live the life you want.
Well, that's awesome. Now I'm going to have to go pick up that book.
I hope so. Yeah.
Because that's one thing I noticed about my son. He wants to make these positive changes, but he has such a negative look on himself. It's overwhelming.
Yeah.
So when someone is setting goals for mindfulness, because some people are just go-getters and they think it's going to happen within like 30 days or a week, what do you tell people? Like, is it like an everyday sort of thing, or you just have to...
Yeah. So it's interesting what you said, because people do want quick fixes. Okay. And we live in a world where that's our expectation, right? We want like things to happen like this. Yeah. It doesn't happen that way. And by the way, that's why most people who try to lose weight or change their health, they get frustrated and they stop. And you know, it's kind of a joke, but like during New Year's, people make these resolutions, right? I'm going to lose weight. Health. All right. So the gyms get this surge of people signing up for gyms. You know what happens like a week or two later? Yeah.
Everybody doesn't go.
Yeah. They don't go and they don't. Yeah, exactly. And they know that. The gyms know that actually because people lose steam. They're like, this is too hard, right? Or it's not happening fast enough, or like, I'm not good at this, right? We have all these self-defeating thoughts that get us stuck. That's one of the barriers. We have a lot of self-defeating thoughts. Okay. So part of it is really practicing patience and really practicing. Okay. Committing to yourself. And it's literally a commitment that you're making to yourself on making the commitment that you're going to be doing the things that's going to enhance your life so that you're your best self. And all of that takes time and effort. And by the way, let's say you try something, right? So with mindfulness, let's say you try one of the things that I said and it doesn't work. Does that mean that you just chuck the whole thing? No. You say, okay, that didn't work. What else could I try? And then you try something else, right? And let's say that didn't work. Then you go to plan C, go to plan D, go to plan E, go to plan F. I don't care where, if you have to go all the way down the alphabet. But it's about not giving up and saying, oh, you know, I'm not doing this. You got to try it until you find something that just with exercise is the same thing. People were like, oh, you know, I tried this. And I'm like, okay, but you tried getting on a bike and you tried running. You didn't like both of those things. There's a lot more exercises you could do. You could do Zumba, right? You could do kickboxing. You could do I could Pilates. There's a thousand types of exercises. You could walk. You could go upstairs. There's so many things you could do. You can't give up.
That is amazing. Now I can tell my son this because I'm like, oh, if that doesn't work, you keep trying until you find something that works for you.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, part of the process, and we know this, anything that we want in life that's important to us, we have to put effort into. Like, think about it. What comes easy? I mean, I don't know anything that comes easy that you really, really want. You have to put work into it. You have to put effort. You have to commit to being uncomfortable. You have to, it's a commitment. But guess what? You commit because you're worth it. If you say to yourself, I am worth it no matter what, then you will put in what it takes in order to enhance your life. You will.
Dr. Maitenberg, I thank you so much for coming onto my podcast. This was eye-opening, and I'm going to look up your TED Talk.
Oh, good. Okay, definitely. Yeah, and I have my, actually, I'm very excited because I just recorded my audiobook, which is coming out in May. Yeah, because I know I'm not a bit, I like audiobooks personally. So, so the book, the hard copy is available, but the audiobook is coming out. So, you know, feel free also to get a copy of that too. And happy to send you one if you want one.
Oh, that would be great. I'll send you one.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay. I will be happy to do that.
All right. Thank you so much for taking time out because I know you're a busy person.
You're welcome. So nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you. Have a wonderful day.
As we wrap up another awesome episode of Adulting with Autism, just remember, we're all in this together. Keep being your amazing self, celebrating wins big and small, and facing whatever life throws your way with a smile. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time, stay awesome and keep shining bright. Oh, and if you want to help our podcast grow, don't forget to share it with your friends, leave us a review, and hit that subscribe button. This is April Ratchford signing off from Adulting with Autism.